I really do believe that the most growth you have is at the failure point. And it really separates the good from the great to me. It's amazing how failure can propel you to great heights.
Welcome to IgniteCast, the podcast of the Ignite Leadership Conference presented by the Community Development Foundation. My name is Rory Tyre. I'm a facilitator and coach with Go Innovation. We do custom leadership and human development solutions around the world.
And I'm Judd Wilson with the Community Development Foundation. I'm the Vice President of the Chamber of Commerce, and we bring more and better jobs to Tupelo, Lee County, Mississippi.
For this episode, we had the privilege of sitting down with Sean Soggs. He's the president of the Toyota manufacturing plant here in Northeast Mississippi in the town of Blue Springs. When it opened in 2011, it provided about 2,000 jobs, which is huge for this part of Mississippi. Sean is an incredible leader. He has worked his way up from the bottom to get to where he is now, and he had a lot of really awesome things to say about building a team, seeking feedback, being available. So let's take a listen now to what Sean had to say.
First off, Sean, just kind of tell us who you are, what you do at Toyota, and how you got to where you are now at Toyota.
I am currently the president of Toyota Mississippi. I started at Toyota a little over 20 years ago as a team leader, a new hire team member online, team leader online, and went through the process just like any other team member would. The day of work, the application process, and I was very fortunate to be one of the ones selected to start the new Indiana plant, and we started building the Tundra there years and years ago. And I've been very, very fortunate in my career to be a group leader, AM, assistant manager, all those things. And now I sit in front of you today as the president of a manufacturing plant in Mississippi, building the Corolla. So it's been a nice journey. But obviously, I couldn't have gotten here without the team members that have supported me throughout my whole career. So it's been a really good journey.
So you kind of talk about you got here because of the other team members.
Yeah.
Think back, not even at Toyota, but you can mention Toyota as well. A lot of times we get to where we are because somebody was there for us or a mentor or whatever.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about some mentors in your life and what they did to get you to where you are today.
I just have always had the ability or have enjoyed helping people get to a place they don't believe they can get to,
right,
to be perfectly honest with you. And at an early age, I watched a few people do that. It could have been a teacher. It could have been a football coach. It could have been my drill sergeant or my first platoon sergeant. Even some of maybe a couple of my uncles who were in a really good position, I would always look and say, hey, how'd they get there? What are they doing? How'd that happen? How'd that work? And I would just put a lot of those things in my tool chest and try to practice those things. So throughout my career, I typically go back into that toolbox every once in a while. And what I've discovered with most of those people that were really, really successful is they led by doing. They really led by doing some of the jobs. So some of my most proud accomplishments is I was certified on production jobs. I can go online and actually do the job that a team member can do, which made me really, really excited. So it's kind of easier for them to understand my direction if they know I can do what they have done. Same thing in the Army, same thing when I played football, the whole nine yards. Learning, leading by doing really, I think, set me up for success early. And then keeping to my word, you know, if I said I was going to do something, you know, I was going to do it.
Right.
And my team members realized that, man, he's a man of his word. He's going to take care of us. So at the end of the day, I'm here for them, you know. And throughout my career, I've always tried to practice that. I'm here for them. So you get excited when you can see other people succeed.
Right.
Yeah.
You mentioned football and you mentioned the military.
Uh-huh.
What's one thing that coach said to you that you still hear in your mind?
Yeah, I'll give you an example. When I was a junior in high school, I remember, you know, you do the two-a-days in August. So if a person's not familiar with football, you really make your most gains in the month of August before the season starts. And you typically have 3 weeks of practice. And you practice twice a day during those days, and it's typically about 100 degrees, you know. And I remember vividly my defensive coordinator saying, Suggs, this will be the toughest thing you'll ever do in your life. The toughest. And he would say that to make sure if you can persevere this, there's nothing that you'll encounter later in life that you won't be able to do. So when the football team I played for, they didn't have a cut. They didn't like list a group of people and say, sorry, Jane, John, or Joe, you didn't make the team. They didn't have a list like that because you cut yourself. Those practices were so intense. Those two-a-days, 4 hours, 4 hours, they were so intense that the week just didn't make it. So at the end, you know, you had your football team. And in the military, obviously, it really doesn't matter who you are, where you're from, your upbringing, your parents, your degree, it doesn't really matter. It's all about the team because of the job that you have to protect the country. So you learn early in basic training how important teamwork is and how you have to rely on your partner,
right,
and your teammate. I tell my team all the time, hey, if you see me falling off a cliff, don't say, well, he's the president, he's got it. No, you better grab me and don't let me fall off the cliff. You know, so those were some of the lessons, I think, when I was a youngster that I learned that have stuck with me for a long time.
Still relying on that team.
Relying on the team concept, because at the end of the day, that's where the magic happens. It really does. You know, we talk about teamwork makes the dream work. You think in my situation, we build a Corolla. We put over 2,000 parts together on that vehicle. We produce one every 93 seconds. 2,000 people. Teamwork is critical. You have to have great teamwork. So we promote that every single day, and we also reward great teamwork because what's rewarded gets repeated. We also have learned over my career that the reward and recognition that you can give to someone for doing a great job goes leaps and bounds later, and they continue to want to do those habits or behaviors that you want.
Right.
Yeah.
So you speak about football teams, military, the Toyota team, your personal life or whatever, you don't always win. There's sometimes a failure.
Yes.
And the key is, I guess, learning from those failures.
Yes.
Can you tell us a time where you have failed, but more importantly, what you learned from that failure?
Yeah, I really do believe that the most growth you have is at the failure point. And it really separates the good from the great to me. I'll give you a simple example that happened to me when I was a team leader about 20 years ago. Toyota has this system where we shower test every vehicle to make sure it doesn't leak for the customer. We have this big piece of equipment that goes through. And my team was responsible for this shower tester. I led that team. And one day we had this pipe burst. We had water everywhere, gallons of water everywhere. And I was so upset that day because my team, that's my team's responsibility, you know. Man, this is going to come on me. And I remember one of my Japanese advisors saying to me, Sean, why are you so upset? What's going on? I said, we've got water all over the place. I got to get this thing fixed. Da, 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 da. He said, okay. And then after the dust settled, he came back up to me and he said, when we fell down, did you pick something up or did you just start running again? I said, what are you talking about? Did I pick something up when I fell down? He said, no. When you know, we had this big issue, when you fell down, did you pick something up or did you just get up and start running again? I said, no, man, we had some stuff to do. We got, you know. He said, no, did you pick something up when you fell? And it finally, after like four times, it hit me like, okay. He said, Sean, we're all going to make mistakes. We're going to all have failures. But the key is, what did you pick up and what was your key learning from that experience so it never repeats? So it paused me a little bit, and it also told me or taught me a valuable lesson that my image and the thoughts and the voice and how I portrayed that issue to my team was very important during the crisis. So that was one of the valuable lessons I learned early in my career. You got to pick something up when you fail. You get the most growth during that time period. It's amazing how failure can propel you to great heights. It's amazing.
Yeah, yeah. And so accomplishments, let's talk about accomplishments that you've learned from that you can look back and say, that's why I am where I am.
I tell everybody this who asks me, my greatest accomplishment, and I've got 3 college degrees, 8 years Army, this role that I'm in now, blah, 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 all that stuff's really, really good. But my greatest accomplishment was graduating high school, to be perfectly honest with you. I am the youngest of 7 kids, and I'm the first one to graduate high school. And growing up in the area that I grew up in, you know, dropping out of high school was like a normal thing to do. Me going through and persevering through all of the environmental things that were going on around me in the inner city, graduating high school propelled me to the levels that I never thought I would achieve. That high school diploma was like, it was like gold to me. You know, I got through high school, I went to the military, I had no money for college, so I did the Be All You Can Be Army commercial deal, but I got money for school, and it propelled me to through the Army, through my first college degree, second college degree, my master's degree. It built a foundation for me professionally that has been amazing. Now, my greatest personal accomplishment, obviously, is my beautiful 6 kids. I've got 6 kids, they range from 23 to 31, and that's been an amazing ride as well. But from a leadership perspective, that high school diploma, I'll tell anybody, that's been my greatest accomplishment because it's springboard to everything else.
That's great, that's great. Yeah. You mentioned family. It's important to be a leader at work, but also at the home as well. Yes. Sometimes we ask this question, why is it important to actually take time away from work and be a leader somewhere else? Do you feel like that's important?
I think it's very important. One of the things that I had to do early in my career is when you have so many kids, I would take each kid's birthday. So no matter what day their day was, on that birthday, I would take off early to spend the afternoon with them. And I would put that in my calendar to force myself to get out of there, to get home, to spend some time. And my kids would look forward to that day. Oh, Dad's coming home because it's my day. You know, they have one birthday a year, but I had to carve out time each month to make sure. The point I'm trying to make is you have to be purposeful with it. You have to be intentional. Sometimes we can't plan crises at work, you know, they just happen, which may delay you or something. But if you can be intentional about the work-life balance and schedule the time. Had to do the same thing, date night with my wife. Fridays were golden. Friday night, we were going somewhere to eat, you know. And for my personal self, how would I create time for my personal self would always be a Sunday afternoon after church, you know. I would always carve out a couple hours to do some reading or have some Sean time. Because at the end of the day, you also have to have some Sean time.
You mentioned earlier about people that you learn from, it's not actually what they said, but what they do.
Yes.
And I notice with Toyota, y'all do so much in the community. Why do you see that's important to lead a community, not just, hey, we make cars, but, hey, we want to make a difference in the community? Is that something that you really stress with your team members?
Yeah, we stress that with our team members a lot. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's really listening to them and what moves them. They'll come up to you and say, hey, we've got this event at the da-da-da-da-da. Can you guys come out and hang out? Oh, can you support this? Hey, my son participates in the da-da-da-da-da. We get a lot of great ideas from our team members,
right,
to be perfectly honest with you. So when they talk to us and it's something that they're interested in and we support it, you're talking about a win-win.
Yeah.
But the other thing that's very important for us is, you know, we just don't want to be a great car company. We want to be a big, great community company. You know, we've always done that no matter what location we've been in because we've got team members that live in the communities, you know. Why not help them not only at work but in the places that they live? So it's always been a passion for us. We want this community to grow. When this community grows, Toyota grows.
What qualities do you feel every leader should have?
great leaders are able to go somewhere and they're able to get some other people to follow along with the ride and the journey. You have to be a man or a woman of integrity. I think that's probably the fundamental baseline, integrity. You also have to be a visionary. I think there's a significant difference between a manager and a leader. Leaders are thinking, what if? How can we? Can we go? Why not go there? What are your thoughts about? I can't believe we haven't stretched and went further. They're always thinking two or three steps ahead, always thinking as a visionary to stretch the company out. But you also can't outkick your coverage. And for the people that may not understand that comment, in football, you know, you punt the ball to the other team. But they have this thing called hang time. You know, if you punt the ball too fast, your coverage can't get down and tackle the person. But if you punt the ball with the perfect hang time, you give your team enough time to get down there to tackle the person. So you can't outkick your coverage. What that means is you can be a great visionary, but you got to be careful setting up all these lofty goals that are so far out there, and your team's like, I'm tired, man. I can't run that hard. I can't get there. So you got to pace where you want to go as well. So when you strategic plan, you have to be intentional on what you want to attack, but you also have to make sure your team is equipped to do it. So integrity, being a great visionary, lead by doing. I'd rather see a sermon than hear a sermon kind of thing. I told you I walk about 3.5 miles a day. That means my feet are on the floor and not my butt behind my desk all day. So, you know, you have to have some face time with the people that are making it happen on the shop floor as well. So those are just some general things that I believe in as a leader.
That walk matching that talk.
Absolutely.
You talked about creating a culture of reward.
Yes.
Something we have found true across like every sector, across culture, is that it's much easier for people to create a culture of correction than a culture of reward. So we teach feedback, and one of the ways we teach feedback is you should actually be 80% of your time as a manager who's spent giving positive, affirming feedback so that people know what to live up to. That's difficult. That's really difficult. So I would love for you to elaborate on how do you create a culture of reward, and even in your case, promote leaders who themselves can create that kind of culture on their teams?
Yeah, that's a great question. And what I've heard before in my life is, and I think it's crazy when I hear this, but I hear people saying that, man, you can, you know, sometimes you can reward people too much, man, and it just gets old, and people start saying, is it genuine or not? Da-da-da-da-da. That is baloney. Mm. I've never had anybody come up to me and say, Sean, you know, man, you reward me way too much. You give me so much praise. Can you stop it? I've never had anybody tell me that.
Yeah, I feel too appreciated.
I feel just way too appreciated, man. You just need to stop it. I've never heard anybody say that. Yeah. I think dinosaur managers think, boy, if I reward this person every day, it's going to get old and they're going to think it's stale. Blah, blah, blah. Mm. Those are dinosaur leaders or managers. You have to reward and give people the praise that they need on a daily basis. Now, there may be some situations where if you don't feel comfortable doing it, don't do it. It's got to be genuine. It always has to be general. Don't do it to just check the box. I rewarded two people today. Woo-hoo! Because the person will sniff that out as not being genuine, and they'll know it's not real. So I don't think you can do it enough. In our organization, we have a lot of different facets where we do it. We do it on a daily basis, monthly basis. We reward team members for a multitude of things because I really do believe what's rewarded gets repeated. And the positive rewards will reap positive benefits. I really do believe that. But what I've also discovered is I think you're 100% correct. We still need, it's a continuous improvement process to get leaders to understand the value. Just because your title is X don't mean you understand the value. And I'll give you one last example. One thing I did with my leadership team a couple of years ago is, and this is the feedback that we heard from my team members 5 years ago when I came to Mississippi, we just want people to smile and say, how you doing? How's your day going? So what I did was I took a stopwatch out and I timed myself walking around the whole shop office and spoke to everybody there. You know, I just wanted to see how long it would take, you know. So the next time I did a presentation for the leadership team, I put 3 minutes and 52 seconds up on the slide. And they were like, man, what is he? He's always up to something. What does 3 minutes and 52 seconds mean? And so I explained to them, that's how long it took me to walk the whole shop. Hey, how you doing today? You doing all right? Family's good? Everything going okay? Family's all right? You good? Everything good? What a great game this weekend, man. Oh, Mississippi State, no miss. Woo-hoo! Next person. 3 minutes and 52 seconds. So what you'll hear people say is, man, I don't have time. I've got stuff to do. I've got a lot going on. 3 minutes and 52 seconds and you can't say hi to people? Come on. It's crazy, right?
Yeah.
But it's using that kind of example and data. People just want a personal connection, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, we talk about making feedback informal and frequent. Yes. Positive. Like informal, yes. Make it frequent, and it will create that culture. You mentioned continuous improvement, this Japanese concept of Kaizen. It's become pretty famous because of how successful Toyota has been. And we actually use this as a leadership essential when we do some of our work with other teams. One of the things that can get in the way of creating a culture of Kaizen is a fear of failure.
Yes.
And so we've worked with Coca-Cola and Pepsi bottling subsidiaries as an example where when you say failure, what that means is missed deadlines, missed product. You know, there's like a very concrete, and so a lot of times people feel they don't have the room to carve out that kind of space or try something new, innovate, take a risk. Because guess what? If you fail, there's like a very clear bottom line. In a manufacturing environment, I'm sure there's that similar. So how do you help remind people that culture of continuous improvement, that rather than how do you instill in them, rather than a fear of failure, the ability to think of failure as a learning environment? How do you do that?
That's a really good question. So we do it on a lot of different levels at our company. We have these things called quality circles, and they're like Kaizen circles, continuous improvement circles, and they're led by our team members. So our team members can pick a topic that's meaty or something that they want to fix. We give them time to fix it on their own. They can fix it. And they can compete for an award, you know, for best in the plant, et cetera. And then they can go global. We have a team going to Japan to compete. And we have a North America team that would go to Charlotte and compete, as an example. And I tell you that story to say that we are giving them an opportunity to be creative. But during this process, there's a lot of coaching and guiding, because every path you take is not always a great path. To me, the magic is the coaching and the guiding. Like, to keep a team member motivated, Sean, I really want to put this water bottle right here. Because if I put this water bottle right here, Sean, it's going to help us significantly. But Sean may see if you put that water bottle right there, it'll fail. It'll fall off the table every single time. But the team member may not see that. So you got two choices to make when that person wants to put the water bottle right there. You can say, hey, man, don't ever put that water bottle right there because it's going to fall off the table. And then that person goes, dang it, man, I can't ever do anything right. You can stunt a lot of growth that way. The manager or leader has to say to themselves, what would hurt if that water bottle fell one time? So the team member could see the damage done, so they'll know on their own. I think it's how you coach, how you manage that situation, and motivate through the failure so they can continue to take risk and take chances. The second thing I'll say, and we can move on to the next question, is we also have, with my general managers and vice presidents, I have set up Innovation Fridays for them. So they're scheduled throughout the year. Half day on Friday, they have to leave and go benchmark somebody for innovation. They have to go do something to innovate and think outside the box. They have to bring some idea back and try it. Whether it's successful or not, I'll be perfectly honest with you, I really don't care. I want them to experience the magic of trying something new.
We work with organizations that are truly global, and the idea of boundary-spanning leadership becomes really important. And so there's different kinds of boundaries. Two that I see at work with you at Toyota are cultural boundaries, so demographic boundaries. In other words, it's a Japanese company,
yes,
and you're head of a North American plant from that Japanese company. And then geographic boundaries, right? So there's people ultimately to whom you're accountable that may not be here. They may be in Japan at,
yes,
some level, right?
Yes.
So those two boundaries are important. How do you, you know, you could pick one or talk about both. How do you span those boundaries, you know, to like move forward together and make sure that they're not stumbling blocks, but rather that you can like leverage the strengths?
Yeah, wow, that's a really good question. So, you know, obviously we're a global company. I will tell you, over the last 10 years, Toyota has come a long way on giving the keys to the car to the American presidents. So now all of our plants, with the exception of one in the Texas plant, are led by American presidents. So, you know, we've been in this country doing business for over 50 years now. So that's it, it's a transition that has happened, but they're really giving the keys over to us. They're trusting us that we're going to lead the organization, but not lose our DNA. I think that's very important, that we always remember the Toyota way, continuous improvement and respect for people, and also the Toyota production system. So once they give you the keys to the car, you've got to make sure you can drive that car to take it to new heights, but don't lose the foundation and the fundamentals. And I'll just tell you from a personal example, I'm in Japan probably 2 or 3 times a year, giving them an update on how we're doing here in Mississippi. And we also have them come to our plant and get an update on how we're doing in Mississippi. So the communication is also very important, and our partnership has been really good. And a lot of people may not realize this, but in our plant we have about 25 Japanese advisors, leaders, and that's pretty consistent in every U.S. plant that has Asian influence. Nissan's the same, Honda's the same. And we have those advisors there. They're like senseis almost, you know. When you run into a problem or something, you can always rely on some of them to help you get through some of those DNA things that you may not be aware of.
So almost like culture coaches.
Yes. Okay. Really, really good to have them there. It's pretty cool.
Last question I have. We often get the chance to coach either CEOs or a CEO and his or her group of direct reports. And one of the things we know from research is that the higher up you get in an organization, the more difficult it is to receive candid feedback.
Oh, wow.
Like, it is hard for you,
yeah,
to receive the feedback that you really need to make some decisions in terms of getting an honest pulse of the culture of the,
yes,
plan. So something I love to ask people in your position is, what do you do? How do you make space or provide an opportunity to get that feedback, overcome the fear factor, the distance factor, the time factor? What do you do? What does that look like for you personally to get that feedback?
Yeah, so I do it by a lot of conversations. You know, we have lunch and learns, what we call them. We have round tables. We have diagonal slice, where we have different levels in the organization, and I'll meet with them. A lot of one-on-ones. I think it's through a lot of conversations at every different level of the organization. And you try to put all these trust deposits in so someone could actually come up and give you that feedback that you're talking about. Let me give you an example that just happened yesterday. I had a team leader online schedule a 30-minute meeting with me. Now think about this. We've got 2,000 team members there. A team leader's like 8 levels below me. And this team leader schedules a 30-minute meeting with me. And I'm thinking, wow, how cool is this? So I get to the room. She says, "Sean, I really have some stuff I want to share with you today." I said, "Oh, cool." And I always have my index card and I'm writing notes. She has 4 great ideas on how to improve team member morale. And I'm like, "Oh, this is awesome." And I'm writing these notes down thinking, "Wow, this is so cool." And it made me so happy that day that I said, "Man, it's starting to work. They're getting it. They feel like the open door is really there. They can come and talk to me," and, you know, all those things. So that just happened to me yesterday morning. Seriously, true story. And I was so impressed with that team member thinking outside the box. The Toyota, what we started this year through Akio Toyota is Start Your Impossible. And we talk about starting your impossible throughout the whole plant. We've got banners up the whole nine yards. But it's really about taking the pulse of your plant and taking it somewhere else or doing something innovative and different. This team member is starting their impossible by starting at the top and telling me all these great things that they would like to do. My only thing that I always come back with, are you willing to be a part of the solution? And if that team leader says, yes, I want to be a part of it, let's go. Let's make it happen. Let's try it. So I think it's through a lot of conversations. It's making those trust deposits so you can get that honest feedback no matter what level it is, and you take it from there. And I know we're probably running out of time, but I want to tell you another story that happened to me when I worked at Nissan. I was the quality director at the Canton plant down south. And I promise you, man, I'd only been there a week. 1 week. I try to listen, learn, and then launch. When you start a new job, you got to listen, learn, and then launch your plan that you want to do. So I've been there 1 week. And I met with the leadership team just to give them my background and just to learn the plan. I didn't even know where to go, really. And I had this team member come up to me on the floor. And she said, you're that Toyota guy, aren't you? I said, yes, ma'am. She said, you haven't done nothing here. You've been here a week, and it's the same as it has always been. What are you going to do about this place? You've been here a week. And I was thinking, she's dead serious. She's really serious. I've been here a week, and she's really expecting great things. That was a lesson learned for me big time. And I said, wow, she's serious. I jotted her name down. I was like, I'm coming back to you. And we kicked some butt and we won all these awards. And, you know, so about a year and a half later, we won our first J.D. Power award for that plant. The Altima won J.D. Power Best in Class. And I found her with that trophy. I tell you that story to tell you this, that the expectations are very high for leaders. And the team members' expectations are even higher. You think the leader's expectations are higher of you. The team members on the shop floor, their expectations are 10 times higher for you to make things happen for them, to change the culture, to make it better. So you've got to spend time with them to understand deeply what they want. And you got to attack. And you got to follow up. And you got to follow up.
We've been sitting here with Sean Suggs, great leader of Toyota. We want to thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.
We want to thank you for starting your impossible, because your company has done great things for Tupelo and Lee County and the surrounding counties, and we just thank you for your passion. We thank you for your leadership and for all that you do, and thank you for spending time with us today.
Thank you very much. It's been a great time. Thank you.